Hey there, this is Anish Majumdar, career coach. Get ready for something transformative with Aubrey Johnson and The Road to Rediscovery.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. Now, as you know, you can hear this show anywhere you get your podcasts worldwide. I repeat, worldwide. If you happen to listen on Apple Podcasts, we invite you to leave a rate and review. Otherwise, we still would love your input and your feedback. Just send us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. And we'll give you a shout out in a future episode. And as always, we are truly, truly grateful for your listenership. All right. My special guest is a transformational philosopher specializing in exploring the power of expanded consciousness. For over 20 years, he's led and guided workshops, retreats, and professional trainings, impacting countless individuals by sharing insights into the nature and the full potential of consciousness. Let's welcome Dr. Shai Tubali to the show. Dr. Tubali, it's so great to have you here. Welcome, sir.
Hello, Aubrey. It is a great delight to be with you today.
Well, thank you so much. Likewise, we are thrilled that you are here. Now, you hold a doctorate in the philosophy of religion, and you have immense background in psychological transformation and consciousness. Numerous books and publications you have written. Long before these achievements, can you tell us about your early years of exploring and learning about philosophy and consciousness? What was it about it that intrigued you to pursue this?
Well, I think that from a very early age, I had this kind of unexplainable eagerness to find some answers to life's greatest questions. And so very early in my adulthood, it was in my early 20s, I embarked on this journey of self-discovery. I think that this kind of, there was more than 2000 years ago, there was this maxim inscribed on the temple of Apollo in Delphi, ancient Greece, and it said, "Know thyself." And that mm-hmm. was the invitation to know thyself. And I think that I wanted to know myself in the deepest sense. And I had this strange sense that I didn't know myself because yes. I was so consumed with fears and worries, anxieties, and confusions. Mm-hmm. So at first, I tried to start academic studies. And hoping that somehow the professors might have the answers to life's greatest questions.
Yes.
That ended in great disillusionment. So I found myself looking elsewhere on the journey of spiritual transformation.
Yes.
I found myself traveling to India, meeting gurus. And at a certain point, at the age of 23, I had a certain expansion, spontaneous expansion of my consciousness that finally opened the way to an effortless, a more effortless self-exploration.
I see. Amazing. And I'm so glad you mentioned that, I don't know if to call it a revelation or an epiphany, but that amazing experience where you had that expansion, right? So in your years of studying, what are the elements that enables you yourself to expand perspectives and have a broadened view of consciousness. Did this happen involuntarily? Did it happen subconsciously? Are there any elements? It's one thing to be in a state of consciousness, but to have that expanded view, what are the elements that transforms from simply a state of consciousness to an expanded view of consciousness?
Well, I think that the elements have always been the same for already thousands of years. And some of the ancient Greek philosophers told us about these elements, and some of, and certainly many of the Indian seers of ancient India told us all about it. And the elements are first and foremost meditation.
Yes.
Meditation helps us realize the nature of our consciousness, you see, because sometimes we think when we talk about the expansion of consciousness, it sounds so grandiose and so abstract and so unachievable. It's like some kind of psychedelic extraordinary state, but really it is our very awareness right now. Right now, we are not only alive, right? But we are also aware of the fact that we're alive. We're aware of our existence. Yes. And this kind of awareness, this kind of observation, this ability to look as if from the outside at our experience, this is our awareness. Now, this awareness is usually so glued to circumstances, mundane worries, memories, self-images, thoughts, emotions, that we experience our awareness as a very limited, very contracted element.
Yes.
So the whole idea in meditation is to disengage this awareness from life, body awareness and all that, and begin to experience it as something that is free, unaffected, independent from conditions, from people's recognitions, from the need to become somebody in order to prove our existence. So this is the first practice, meditation.
Wonderful. Wonderful. That's extraordinary. And I love it. Thank you for sharing that clarification, Dr. Tabali. I'm a proponent and an advocate for meditation. To me, there's a center of my mind. There's a centering of myself when it comes to meditation. And it's so amazing how you can see more and observe more by being still. So I'm a huge advocate of that. Now, it also really, I think, resonates with the listeners. And I'd love for us to put this into perspective for the listeners regarding how important this can be in raising the bar or improving their quality of life. Because as you know, Dr. Tabali, there's all sorts of noise in this world, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we have technology and social media, the phone is ringing, you're getting emails, all of these notifications popping up on our phones. We have, people calling us. We have demands of our job, demands of our family members that they have of us. And it's so much going on. One can be easily overwhelmed and try to take so much time in tending to those demands when there should be time to tend to oneself and actually sit, be still, and focus and meditate so that they can have that observation to not be overwhelmed, to understand, where they are and observe what's around them. How can you help the listeners in understanding how to control and be intentional of their time, their mental stableness, to take the time to do these things, and when we're doing this, we're not really turning our backs on our demands. We're actually equipping ourselves to handle those demands, I feel. But is there anything you can help for the listeners' benefit in how to manage through all the noise and societal expectations so that they can have time to dedicate to themselves to study consciousness?
Well, yes, of course. That's so beautifully put. Thank you. Well, I would say, first of all, when we begin to taste this kind of inner stillness, our appetite grows. You see, and then we feel increasingly drawn to this kind of experience. Let's put it this way: we, exactly as you say, we need to have this kind of alone time, but alone in the profoundest sense, making friends with ourselves. Because mm-hmm. the thing is that we don't know ourselves. We don't know who we are, mm-hmm. Except in isolation or independently from the world, from how the world perceives us, and we mm-hmm. have to get to know ourselves. Mm-hmm. I always say that we have two selves. Mm-hmm. One self is the self of time, the self of the world, our social self, the self that is also the self that depends on the future.
Yes.
The self that is doing, that is the doer of our life. But then there is another self that we don't know. And that self is the self that can only be known in stillness, and it has nothing to do with action. It is actually it is all about being and freedom from doing and not needing to justify our existence. To actually be, to experience this kind of completeness, this kind of wholeness, this kind of absence of neediness. When we experience this kind of second self, we need nothing. We are finally content with just being. So mm-hmm. when we begin to understand how important it is, because this second self, self two, we can call it, constitutes half of our being, and yet we don't know it. So how can you wow. exist while not knowing half of your being? 50% of your being is in the dark. So that is why we need to start appreciating the need for that alone time.
That makes a lot of sense. It makes so much sense, and everything is coming together in my mind, visually, in my mind's mm-hmm. eye, as you explain this. And for the listeners, I just want to briefly kind of share a dark period I've had in my time, which in a book that I co-authored about overcoming adversity, as you were explaining this, Doctor, there was... I started to think back to a very dark time that I've had where at the time I didn't think it was a dark time because I was young, I was mm-hmm. single, I had no children, I lived by myself, I had a great job, and I have done so much socializing and going out to different places, meeting different people and partying every night. And I did not allow myself the time to be still, to be alone, to know myself too, as you so eloquently explained. And quite honestly, I was afraid of slowing down mm-hmm. to figure out who myself too was. And over time, I started to discover I was afraid of being alone. And it was because of that self too. I was afraid of revealing some vulnerability in getting to know that self too. Now I understand that may not be the case for everyone who is going through the demands of life and mingling with society. They may truly want to have that alone time and not afraid of having it, such as I, you know, but either scenario, it begs for the need to be still, to be alone, as you explained, and to understand who that self too is, that is more, I guess it's more introspective in terms of discovering who you are. So speaking of adversities and so forth, I wanted to talk briefly about the expansion of trauma. I'd love for you to, if you can share, you know, for people to heal, how can they revisit with the intent to heal without feeling as if they're reliving their trauma? You know, trauma affects people differently, and some people, at least the people I've had on my show, I try to be very sensitive in terms of asking them to recount from a past traumatic experience, because I don't want them to feel as if they're reliving it. Yes. But how can one kind of revisit with the intent to heal, but not feel as if they're reliving and maybe return to that trauma?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, because the thing is, and here is the key, and this is also the key, this key connects expansion of consciousness, mm-hmm. and trauma healing. You see, if we look into the root cause of the traumatic experience and what makes it so difficult to digest, and this mm-hmm. is a huge topic, of course, but mm-hmm. Let's start by saying this, that it is all rooted in a sense of immense smallness and vulnerability. Mm-hmm. It means that we experience ourselves as far too small mm-hmm. to contain, handle, or digest the memory or the event mm-hmm. earlier. So we feel that the little power that we had had was robbed of us, and now we feel that we're unable to return to that experience because we haven't taken care of that sense of smallness. So we still experience ourselves as that small. Now, what a very evocative metaphor for awareness, for consciousness, is the genie in the bottle.
Yes.
Because we experience ourselves as a sort of awareness is a genie trapped in a bottle, unable to reveal its magnitude. Now, what happens when we begin to expand our consciousness is that we are finally able to realize this magnificent realization that we are not our traumas, we are not our past. Our consciousness is far bigger than any experience, any memory, no matter how traumatic it was. And I'm saying that with utmost respect, mm-hmm. only because I've had the privilege of working with people suffering from immense traumatic memories. Mm. So just to give an example, a child waking up one morning and discovers, this is a true story, discovers that his mother is gone, just disappeared overnight. And then he is in this new reality without a mother, and he asks his father what had happened, and his father says, "You are not even allowed to talk about it. You are never allowed to even mention what your mother again."
Yeah.
And then he suffers from twofold trauma, because he lost his mother, mm-hmm. and now he's not allowed even to mention her, so he's not allowed to grieve.
Oh my.
Grieve. So this is a terrible condition. Only years later did the mother reconnect with that child.
Okay.
Now how could a child with this kind of unfiltered experience of life handle this thing, because all of a sudden the child is thrust into this kind of deep shock, And in this deep shock, the world seems to have stopped.
Right.
And what the child had known as the continuum of events is abruptly discontinued. So there is, the ground is removed beneath the child's feet. So this kind of powerlessness, where there is no meaning to one's will or one's wish, is exactly this problem. And of course, we respond with an absence of presence. It's as if we don't want to experience, so we disappear, and our automatic thinking begins to take over. So there is a lot of room for the formation of all kinds of irrational conclusions about life, and
right.
so on and so forth. Life freezes at that moment. So what we need is this kind of bigness that enables us to contain such a tremendous event,
mm-hmm.
and to amazingly to say yes to that event. This means that I'm willing, from that sense of greatness, mm-hmm. to embrace the event as the genie that can now that is now bigger than the bottle.
Right.
Memory.
Oh my goodness! Wow. I love it. I mean, just talking about the very things that you explained in your example, your real life true example of this child missing his mother, waking up to her not being there. The trauma was twofold: not being able to talk about it at all or grieve, and again, this is nothing like anything this child has ever experienced. So that is terribly traumatic, you know. And so in that example, you talked about how, you know, we are not our traumas. They do not define who we are. Mm-hmm. You know, getting past and recognizing those revelations can help us do the revisit and to heal. It's part of the healing process. So I truly appreciate you clarifying that for us, Dr. Tabali. Wanted to talk about your thoughts on Eastern and Western philosophies.
Yes.
Okay. There's obviously philosophies of both hemispheres, both sides. But in short, Doctor, have these two sides of philosophies, have they been over the years in complementary of each other, or conflicting, or both? What are your thoughts on those?
Oh, this is a wonderful question. Well, and I guess this is the reason that I need to live a double life, a dual life.
A dual life.
I am on the one hand a researcher at the University of Leeds, mm-hmm. in the UK, and on the other hand, I am also what you can call a mystic, in the sense that I strive to experience directly the nature of reality and the nature of myself. It's not enough for me to just think about it.
Yes.
Well, I think that generally speaking, first of all, it's very important to understand that if the more you go back in time,
mm-hmm.
the more you discover that there was once a philosophy also in the West that was not very different from the philosophy of the East.
Oh, okay.
This means that if you find that there are several examples of Greek philosophers,
mm-hmm.
where they actually believed that philosophy was a way of life.
Yes.
You see, that you evaluated the degree, the depth of your, or the truthfulness of your philosophy according to its ability to transform your life.
Mm-hmm.
And to transform your being.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't enough to just think about noble abstract ideas. Now, as we do mostly now in academic philosophy and in the academic world in general. So generally speaking, Western philosophy is more inclined toward objective, the objective scientific, looking at things from the outside as objects, examining right. them, analyzing them, whereas Eastern philosophy yes. has always mm-hmm. had this kind of passion for consciousness, direct realization, and the fact that philosophy only or self-inquiry only made sense if it led you to self-realization, if it yes. elevated your spirit. Yes. So generally there are these kinds of two philosophies, although of mm-hmm. course you can find specific cases both in the West and in the East. You can find logicians and rationalists and materialists in Eastern philosophy, and you can find mystics in Western philosophy. But I think the best way, the ideal, is to marry the two. Mm. You see, for me, that's my fantasy, my vision, mm-hmm. Which I call transformative philosophy. And transformative philosophy means that philosophy only makes sense if it transforms you. So it's important to use your mind. It's important to analyze, to think very, very thoroughly, and to research, to have knowledge.
Yes.
But if it eventually just leaves you in this kind of bodiless or disembodied mental existence, abstract, yes. removed from life, what's the point? Then that's thought, only thought, chasing after its own tail. You see, and that's that's not very fulfilling in terms of our hungry and thirsty soul.
Yeah, no, very true. I mean, it's just perpetuated over and over and over again, and marrying the two, I guess, would have a very holistic, inclusive type of philosophy, as you say, transformative philosophy. That makes a lot of sense. Dr. Tavali, I'd love if you can share, what does it mean when you say or recommend that we keep our mind youthful and flexible? If you can, first off, it's a two-part question. Explain what that means by keeping our mind youthful and flexible. And then explain just some of the benefits in true-to-life examples that people can enjoy from having a youthful and flexible mind.
Yes, well, of course there is a lot of discussion of how to keep our brains young and sharp.
Yeah.
But here when I speak about a youthful mind, it goes deeper than that. You mm-hmm. see, because I distinguish the rigid mind, this is how I call it, the rigid or the old mind, mm-hmm. from the youthful mind. Now, the youthful mind, let's start with the rigid mind. The rigid mind is a mind that accumulates so much knowledge and so much conviction, it stops discovering anything, or stops being willing to discover anything new. It stops listening. It stops asking questions. It begins to have automatic reactions to whatever it hears. It begins to repeat its own stories. It's as if it moves in closed circles, you know, like a broken record.
Yeah, yeah.
and we know sometimes when we begin to repeat the very same anecdotes, the very same jokes, this means that our minds have become so old and that they are absolutely repetitive.
I understand. Yes, I understand what you're saying for sure. It's an older mind. I mean, when we're repeating these things.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And we become entrenched in certain identities and perspectives, and we are so convinced that nothing can change our mind anymore, because we right. know it all. So now the most important gate leading to a flexible, youthful mind is returning to asking questions, first of all.
Yes,
asking questions means that because usually when we ask a question, for you have asked me many questions in this interview, and of course to make this a very engaging and flowing, I respond from my memory, from my knowledge and experience.
Yes,
but we shouldn't be content with that. So we need to be able to return to questions and to just hold on to questions while delaying our answers, not being so quick to answer. And when we receive new piece of information, notice our reactions. Why do we react continuously from the past? Why do we think that we already know the answer? Can we challenge ourselves and remain silent and maintain a certain gap between what we hear and what and how we respond? So then we practice listening. And there is even a practice that I recommend to keep our brains young. It is to ask ourselves questions and then to write down all the possible answers that instantly, automatically come up. Then we look at all these answers, we shred the paper, we throw it into the garbage, and we say, okay, I've eliminated all those old, outdated thoughts. Now let's start anew. So, Socrates, he used to talk about this when he walked in the market in ancient Greece, in Athens. He used to challenge people who thought they knew it all. And he would ask them questions like, what is justice? And they would say, well, what do you want from me? I already know. And then they But then he used to so wisely interrogating them in a way that eventually they realized that they didn't know what they thought they knew. And for Socrates, this was the beginning of wisdom. To not know what you, to know that you don't know.
Right.
What you think you know. You see?
Yes. Yeah, I understand. So that is, I guess, the foundation towards wisdom, where you know what you don't know.
Exactly.
Okay. Exactly. And then, of course, that takes some observation and some self-awareness as well. It sounds like it also requires some humility to bring yourself to the state of admitting that, you know, you know what you don't know. You know that you don't know XYZ or ABC, whatever that may be. The fact is, you know that you don't know it. It's kind of meta, but I understand exactly where you're coming from, because that is leaps and bounds beyond not knowing what we don't know.
Exactly. Right. And I think it's very intuitive when we think about how we were when we were children. Yes. Our minds were open, receptive, and didn't assume that they knew, so they were asking questions all the time. Yes. Children ask many questions.
Yes.
And we, as adults, we think that we already have the answers, so we stop asking questions. So if we can return to this fresh beginning point, we will feel this kind of youthfulness, that we're starting anew and we're starting to explore the world anew.
Absolutely. Having that youthful mind, that sparks curiosity, because to your point, as children ask a lot of questions. I mean, they're new to the world. They want to know, you know, why is the sky blue? Why are the trees green, you know? Why does a cow go moo or a pig go oink, you know, and those sorts of things. And having that youthful mind, it creates and it sustains the state of curiosity within us, And my background is talent development. So I've always considered myself a lifelong learner, and I'm always willing and open to learning. And so, you know, to me, this resonates very, very much so, Dr. Tabali. And I want the listeners to understand that, you know, to have that youthful mind as a child, and you so clearly explained it, having that youthful mind as a child, going back to that youthful mind will open the door of possibilities and opportunities of new knowledge for us, even in our adult years. And another piece of just sound, profound advice that you shared earlier, Dr. Tabali, is to be curious, okay? And in the point that we are, where as adults, a lot of us don't ask as many questions because we figure we know, as we're listening to someone ask us questions, not to be so quick to answer. Learn to do some very impactful and effective listening, because whatever more that person has to ask may change the answer we thought we had as the original answer to their question.
Right. Yes. Yes. Oh, that's profound. Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Life altering in a good way for the better. Sound advice for the listeners. This is absolutely a delight chatting with you, Dr. Tabali. I'd say I would love to know, if you can share for the listeners, how can they follow you, connect with you, learn more about your great work, and you know, like you said earlier, we have this dialogue here. Yes. Where I've asked some questions, you've given some answers based on your experience and your knowledge, okay? And that's of value for the listeners, but it may also spark follow-up questions for listeners who want to go deeper. And for them to get those answers, I would love for them to have the opportunity to connect with you for those deeper questions that may have come out of this conversation.
Of course, gladly. First of all, I have my YouTube channel, which contains nearly 800 videos. So it's abundant with videos, including guided meditations and all sorts of explanation, including what is trauma, for example. So there are some long talks and short inspirational videos and so on. So I certainly recommend starting with that. There's my official website.
Okay.
Both the YouTube channel and my official website are, of course, simply shaitubali.com or writing shaitubali on YouTube. And there are my books on self-transformation, which are everywhere, of course, on Amazon and all other online bookseller platforms.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to make sure and have links to those online booksell publications, platforms, as well as your YouTube channel and your website, all in the episode show notes. So the listeners can click those links, subscribe to your YouTube channel, maybe even purchase a book, and learn more incredible insights on expanded consciousness and the importance of having a youthful and flexible mind, and the benefits for that in sustaining a high quality of life and an improved quality of life that you have to share in all your writings and background and knowledge. Dr. Shai Tabali, I am completely grateful and appreciative of your time and willingness to come on the show and to share your insights. I truly, truly hope we can stay in touch and hopefully bring you back on the show in the future sometime.
It's been an honor to meet you, Aubrey, and to share this exploration with you. Thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Thank you as well. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And look, you may feel like this at times, but in our daily struggles and adversities, you're not alone. Hope is always around the corner, and I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone who you know, who you love, that feels they need motivation, inspiration, and support. We're all roadies on this journey of life, and it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Roads Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadsrediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.